So this evening we begin the first of our two sessions on Inyoni Pesach and Haggadah, and as we know there's quite a bit to say. Chol Ha'aretz Bahar Baharei Zeh Meshubach. But I'd like actually to devote the opening section of this evening's shiur to discuss an important day that takes place before Pesach. And that, of course, is Shabbos HaGadol. And Shabbos HaGadol is an institution all unto itself. In fact, according to the Chidah, there is a minhag. I'm not sure how widespread it is, where it's taken off. But on Shabbos HaGadol, one normally says Shabbat Shalom Mubarak. On Shabbos HaGadol, it says Shabbat HaGadol Mubarak. Or in English, Good Shabbos HaGadol. And if I'm not mistaken, the Mishneh Berurah quotes such a minhag. And there's quite a bit to say about this day called Shabbos HaGadol. And firstly, of course, the question is, why is it called Shabbos HaGadol? What's great about this Shabbos? I mean, every Shabbos is great. Yom Kippur is Shabbos Shabbosah, but how is this Shabbos Shabbos HaGadol? And this question is discussed by the Tur in Or Chaim Siman Taf Lamed. And the Tur says that Shabbos HaGadol is also zecher to a certain nes, marks a certain miracle. And what's the miracle? Well, if you make the cheshbon, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Pei Zayin and Pei Ches that when we left Mitzrayim, it was on a Thursday that year. The year of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Pesach was on a Thursday. Well, counting back therefore to Shabbos, Shabbos then becomes the 10th of Nisan. Okay, what's special about the 10th of Nisan? The 10th of Nisan is when we were told to take the Korban Pesach. It needed to be kept watch over for 4 days, protected, inspected. Now, taking a lamb or a sheep in Mitzrayim was no simple thing. That was considered to be a deity there. The former slaves en masse all of a sudden start ordering these sheep and taking them. Each one takes the lamb, and it aroused the curiosity of the Egyptians. And they asked, what's this for? And the answer is, this: in 4 days' time, this is going to be slaughtered for our God. Well, that's the type of thing that can cause a bit of unrest and bad feeling amongst the Mitzrayim, and this is their deity. And the nes, in the way that the Torah describes it, is that they were unable to resist in any way. They were unable to prevent the Jewish people from doing this. And that itself is considered to be a nes. It's very interesting that rates as a nes, and it marks the day as Shabbos HaGadol. Interestingly, this idea that Shabbos HaGadol gets its name because the Shabbos before Pesach, it was the miracle connected to the taking of the lamb, Mishchu Ukechu Lachem, from the 10th of Nisan, has a slightly different version in Tosfos. Tosfos in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Pei Zayin discuss this matter. And Tosfos present the Nes in a somewhat different light. It's not a contradiction, but a somewhat different version. And that is, and this I believe is quite well known, it's from the Medrash Tehillim in Kuf Lamed Vav, that when they were taking the lamb, so the Egyptians confronted them, what's this for? In 4 days' time, it's going to be Pesach, we're going to slaughter this. And then they told them that at Chatzos, that night, all the Bechorim would be killed. Now, this is after a year of 9 for 9 predictions of plagues coming true, which means when the Bechorim heard that they were next, they decided to put etiquette aside, and they approached Paro, and in fact demanded that he let the Jewish people go, because there was no doubt in their minds that this would actually come true. They had nothing to lose. And out of desperation, they went to Paro as a group. Paro, of course, refused. And Paro's people and his servants refused. And the Medrash relates that in fact there ensued a skirmish, and there was something of a battle between the Bechorim, who were facing certain death in Makas Bechorah, so they took their chances. And they stormed the palace, and there was bloodshed on either side, Egyptian versus Egyptian, over this. And that altercation is actually what is alluded to in the Pasuk in Tehillim, which we say on Shabbos morning, and we'll say also Mitzvah Hashem on Seder night, from Tehillim, from the Kila Olam Chastos, Lemake Mitzrayim Bivchareihem, which literally translates as to smite Mitzrayim with its Bechorim. And we normally understand that that refers to Makas Bechoros. But in Makas Bechoros, Egypt wasn't smitten with its Bechorim. The Bechorim of Egypt was smitten, which means that the Pasuk should have said, Lemake Bechorim Mitzrayim. But it says, Lemake Mitzrayim Bivchareihem, which means smiting Egypt with its own Bechorim. They became part of the Makkah. They became a force that would actually was marshaled against Egypt themselves. And in fact, we've mentioned in previous years, this, according to Rabbi Chiel Heller, in his Perush, Or Yesharim, on Haggadah Shel Pesach, this is the meaning of a very enigmatic explanation. As we know, when we get to Aramiya Vedavi, we take those psukim and we divide them, we chop them into pieces, and we take a word and a phrase, and we keep on elaborating, Kamo Shene'emar, Kamo Shene'emar. And we say that Hashem took us out, Biyad Chazaka, Uvizroa Netuya. Now this is deep into Maggid, so the really Maggid's almost finished. But the point where we say, Uvizroa Netuya, there's a definition attached by the Haggadah, which we may recall, it was Ro'an Netuya, Zuha Cheref. That's the sword. Charbar Shlufa Biyodo, Netuya Al Yerushalayim. And the question that everyone asks is, where's the sword? I mean, there was no sword in Makkas, but it was probably the only thing missing. There was everything else but. But the Makkas of Mitzrayim didn't involve a sword of any kind. So where is the Cheref? It was Ro'an Netuya, Zuha Cheref. I think it's fair to say that at that stage, the questioning has somewhat abated, and discussion is not rife so much at that stage. Halach Ma'anya is over, but we need to understand, what does it mean? Says Rabbi Chiel Heller, there are a number of brothers there, the cherev that the Baal HaGadah is referring to is none other than the cherev which was wielded by the Bechorim against the palace. That's the cherev in the story. That's the battle. The only armed fight that there was there. But what's that got to do with Zroa Netuya? Because Zroa Netuya, the word Natui means extended. Zroa Netuya, an extended arm. I mean, it's such an elusive phrase. It's the Yad Chazaka and Zroa Netuya are very difficult to pin down exactly what they're referring to. But Zroa Netuya, Zroa is force, and Netuya is extended. But what is the concept of force being extended? The meaning is that it is extended beyond its natural boundaries, and that finds utmost expression in the cherev of the Bechorim, because at the very least we would have expected that if it's us against Mitzrayim, at least Mitzrayim would all be on the same side. And yet the force of the Makos, it reached into Mitzrayim's own camp. It was extended into their own ranks, whereby the pride and joy of Mitzrayim, namely their Bechorim, they became themselves a force that acted against them. And that's the cherev which represents the Zroa Netuya. And this is actually part of a miracle and expresses the miracle of just how devastated Mitzrayim had become, that their own Bechorim were taking up arms against them. And that is how Tosfos explains the miracle which took place on the 10th of Nisan, after which it is called Shabbos HaGadol. Now, this raises a very simple question, and that is, generally speaking, when we mark historical events, we don't pay that much attention to what day of the week it was. I mean, if it was a Tuesday or a Thursday, as surely as Yetzias Mitzrayim that year, we just noted, according to the Gemara, was a Thursday. But we don't celebrate Pesach on Thursday every year. It goes by the calendar date, and so it is with all the other days. That being the case, the intuitive date to mark the miracle should be the 10th of Nisan. And if it doesn't fall on Shabbos, so be it. It happened to fall on Shabbos then. Why is it, if we may ask, Manishtana, special date hazer, we call that special dates, that we follow the day of the week? an interesting shaila, Shabbos HaGodol. And the Magen Avraham gives a very interesting answer to this, and that is the 10th of Nisan is not a day that we celebrate. Because the 10th of Nisan, we know more from the Masorah, was actually the day that Miriam passed away. So the 10th of Nisan is Miriam's Yortzeit. You don't turn a Yortzeit into a day of celebration. No further comment about that, but that's what the Magen Avraham says. And therefore, as far as the calendar date is concerned, it's almost as if the date of the month has been taken by the Yortzeit, so to speak. If you want to celebrate, by all means do so. But then gravitate towards the day of the week. It was a Shabbos. Every Shabbos should be. Even if it doesn't fall on the 10th of Nisan, give it its own space, so to speak. So this is the classic, I believe, explanation for why the day is called Shabbos HaGodol over that miracle. But there are other explanations, even yet still from Rishonim. I must mention parenthetically, I'm not sure to what degree people will identify with this, but the Shibole HaLeket, which is one of the Rishonim, he says, why is it called Shabbos HaGodol? Take a look at the Drasha, and all will be explained, says the Shibole HaLeket. It just keeps on going to the extent that Shabbos just seems to be much longer than any other normal Shabbos. That's what the Shibole HaLeket says. Okay. I think some rabbis in later generations saw that as something of a challenge, but that's the Shibole HaLeket. But the Chizkuni has a wonderful explanation here. Again, why Shabbos HaGodol? As we mentioned, this was the day that we were commanded to take the Korban Pesach. 10th of Nisan, 4 days before, take the Korban Pesach. This, in fact, was the first mitzvah beyond that which we already had from the Avos and Shem Mitzvah B'nei Noach, but on the eve of Yetzias Mitzrayim, this was the first mitzvah with which we were commanded as a people. It could be that certain of the mitzvahs of the Torah were kept on a voluntary basis, that we know the Avos kept Tayyak and the Shvatim, but as a command, our first command given to us was on that day. Okay. How does that explain anything? Says the Chizkuni, that's when we became Godol. There is a concept, an expression in the Gemara, Godol ha-mitzuva va-ose. Great is the person who is commanded and performed. Mimisha eino mitzuva va-ose. On that first day, we became mitzuva va-ose. We became Godol, and that's why it's called Shabbos HaGodol. It's very interesting. The Jewish people, it was like our bar mitzvah, almost. We emerged into adulthood. So that's the Chizkuni Godol HaMetzuva Ba'oseh. Quite a different explanation as to why this day is called Shabbos HaGodol is quoted in the name of the Marshal, Rabbi Shlomo Luria. And he actually associates the day with the Haftorah. As we know, there are numerous Shabbosos which get their name after the Haftorah that's read on that Shabbos. Amongst them we have Shabbos Shuva, before Yom Kippur, for Shuba Yisrael, Shabbos Chazon, on somewhat less, a more somber note, Chazon Yishayahu, Shabbos Nachamu, and so on. And similarly is the case with Shabbos HaGodol. How so? Because there's a special Haftorah that we read on Shabbos HaGodol. It's from the Novi Malachi. And first and foremost, what is the actual connection between that Haftorah and Pesach? It doesn't mention Pesach overtly. Why is it the Haftarah for the Shabbos before Pesach? Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, because one of the features of Pesach, which we perhaps don't give that much attention to, or as much attention to, more correctly, is that it's actually a day of din. The Gemara Mishnah tells us in Rosh Hashanah there are certain junctures in the year where there's din for certain things. Sukkos for water, Shavuos for the trees. Those we speak about more. What about Pesach? But Pesach nidonim al hatavua. Pesach is the day of din for produce of the field. Well, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, what is the best way to ensure a good din for produce of the field? The answer is, be sure that you are handling it correctly. Be sure that you are fulfilling your obligations and responsibilities with that truah. That is to say, meeting out, you're apportioning the trumas and maisers and umat nasanim, etc. The critical pasuk which attaches the Haftorah to Shabbos HaGodol, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, is the pasuk which says, Haviyu eskol hamas ros al beis ha'otzar. That's when the Navi tells the people to be sure that if they have maaseres in the house outstanding, bring it to the Beis Oser, bring it to the storehouse, and apportion it to the Leviim. And as a result of that exhortation, which is what will most vouchsafe a good din for the day of Tavua, that's why this is the Haftarah for Shabbos Hagadol, for Shabbos before Pesach. So says Rabbi Yaakov Emden. What's interesting is, in this instance, as again the Marshal maintains, the name of the day is on account of the Haftarah, not the beginning of the Haftarah, like Chazon and Shuva, or Nachamu, but actually the end of the Haftarah. Because the final pasuk, as we know, is and therefore, after the phrase Hagodol v'hanora at the end, Shabbos is called Shabbos Hagodol. So says Marshal. Very interesting. A parenthetical point. But this perush of Marshal, and in, as well the Chizkuni, will explain to us that it could be, you could say Shabbos Hagodol many times, but if you're not into diktuk, you might not realize that actually it's grammatically incorrect. Because Shabbos is a feminine verb. Like Shabbos Hilachem, Mechaleleha Mos Yumas, which means if it's a great Shabbos, and of course it is a great Shabbos, it should be Shabbos Hagadola. Or actually, more correctly, HaShabbos HaGadola. The definite article should have two hays. We break all those rules, and Shabbos is feminine, and Godol is masculine. So how can it be Shabbos HaGadol? But according to the Marshal, HaGadol is a quotation. It's not a description. It's the Shabbos of HaGadol VaHanora. And that's why it's Shabbos HaGadol, and not Shabbos HaGadola. A final, fascinating explanation as to how this Shabbos came to be known as Shabbos HaGadol is to be found in the Shelos HaTshuvos Shemen Hamor from one of the early Acharonim. And it's especially of interest for this year, as we will see. As we know, with the beginning of Pesach, or no sooner has Pesach begun, but on the second day, we already start counting the Omer. Seder night has its night, it has its time, But then, by the next day, it is already being plugged into a path leading up to Shavuos. I mean, and the way that the Torah commands this, as the pasuk states, is Usfartem Lachem Mimacharas HaShabbos, to count from the morrow of the Shabbos. Now, when is the Shabbos? Well, this was, of course, the well-known dispute, much disputed, between the Tzidokim and the Perushim. Whereby for the Tzidokim, who insist on taking everything literally, so for them, Shabbos is Shabbos, Shabbos is always Saturday, which means that Mochas HaShabbos is always Sunday, and they would always make a point of starting to count the Omer from Sunday. Okay, we have a Kabbalah, however, that Shabbos, in this Pasuk, is actually a reference to the first day of Pesach. Incidentally, whenever the Torah introduces a Shabbos, it always calls it Yom HaShabbos. It doesn't refer to it just as Shabbos. Right? The introduction is always Yom HaShabbos. And therefore, Mimachos HaShabbos, amongst other reasons, which the Gemara describes at length in Maseches Menachos and Daf Samechei and Samech Vav, is the first day of Pesach. Okay. Says the Shemen Hamor, it is in order to emphasize this point that we call the Shabbos before Pesach Shabbos HaGadol. Why? Because if you look in the beginning of the seventh parak of Masechta Shabbos, which is known as Klal Gadol Omer B'Shabbos, the Gemara has a very interesting observation, and that is whenever you present something as a Klal Gadol, the implication is that there's another Klal which is less Gadol than that. Otherwise, just say it's a Klal. You have to be very careful with your words. A great Klal presupposes the existence of a lesser Klal. And the Gemara, in fact, wants to know, what's the great Klal and what's the lesser Klal? Okay. If that's the case, then when you talk about something as a day as Shabbos HaGadol, you are implying that there's another Shabbos which is less Gadol than that. What is that Shabbos that's less Gadol than that? It's the first day of Pesach, which is not necessarily Shabbos, because Shabbos is of a higher stature than Yom Tov. In other words, what we're emphasizing is that when the week that Pesach falls, we always call the Shabbos before and Shabbos HaGadol, implying that in the middle of the week, there will be a lesser Shabbos, a Shabbos HaKotan. I mentioned that it's of particular interest this year, because actually, according to this, Hari Ar Shabbos HaGadol, because Pesach falls on Friday, so actually Friday night, Shabbos, which means that the Omer starts to be counted on Motzei Shabbos, so we're actually having Shabbos HaGadol 8 days before. So that's Rizim Makdimim. But what's interesting is, and this is picked up on by the Hasidic classic, the Bnei Yisoschar, who also discusses why is it, he quotes this, the Shedus Achivas Shem and Hamor, Shabbos Bereishis, that is to say Saturday is Shabbos HaGadol, which means Yom Tov is Shabbos HaKotan. But why is Yom Tov Shabbos HaKotan? Not only is it less severe, but there's another point. Says the Bnei Yisoschar, in a classic weaving together of Halacha and here the calendar, the Gemara states in Maseches Bav Metzia, in the first parak, when it discusses who is defined as a gadol and who is defined as a katan with regard to various halachas, and it's not in some respect or in some cases it's not just a question of age, but rather it depends on whether the person is dependent or independent. In the words of the Gemara, gadol hasamuch al shulchan aviv, if the gadol, he may have reached maturity, but he's still dependent on his parents, so he's called a katan with regards to many halachas. Whereas in contrast, a katan, he's young, but he's already independent, he's already called a gadol. That was the famous explanation of the Vilna Gaon as to why as much as the sun and the moon are both called Ma'oras HaGadolim, but the pasuk proceeds to refer to the sun as a Ma'or HaGadol, and the moon as a Ma'or HaKatan. Why? Is it just because of this one's bigger, this one's smaller? The sun has its own light, so that's why it's gadol. The moon is dependent on the sun for its light. It's samuch al shulchan something else, and that's why it's called hamor hakatan. So says the Gaon. But to come back to our discussion, the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is that Shabbos exists independent of anyone's decision, whereas Yom Tov depends on the Beis Din to be Mekadesh to Chodesh. And therefore, because Shabbos is independent, it's called Shabbos HaGadol. Because Yom Tov is yes dependent, it's Somuch al Shulchan Acherim, that's why it's called HaShabbos HaKotan in that respect. So these then are four of the classic explanations as to why the Shabbos is called Shabbos HaGadol. And certainly Shabbos, there should be time outside the drasha to ponder all four of them, and each one has its own contribution. I would actually like to devote a few moments to something that I came across, and I believe in the end it relates back to Pesach, and it's about the Haftorah again, the Haftorah of Shabbos, for Shabbos HaGadol, which ends HaGadol V'Hanorah, as the Marshal pointed out. But how does it begin? It begins with actually a well-known pasuk. We conclude the Shemoneh Esrei with this pasuk. It's from Malachi. V'arva l'Hashem minchas Yehuda v'Yushalayim ki mei olam ukshanim kadmonios. So the mincha offering of Yehuda and Yushalayim will be pleasant before Hashem. Ki mei olam, like in years of old, kshanim kadmonios, days of old and the early years. So that is foretelling a future time when somehow the korbanos will be more pleasing to Hashem. I guess apparently, or currently, not so much when the Navi is talking. In the future, much more so. That's how he just depicts that time. Well, there's a couple of basic questions about the pasuk. Firstly, mincha, I mean, generally it means an offering, but specifically a mincha is a type of offering. It's a meal offering. It comes from flour. And it's interesting to ponder, why is it that the Navi chooses to describe how the korbanos will be pleasant again before Hashem, by specifically in terms of the mincha? Why not say v'arva l'Hashem zevach Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, or whatever it may be? Why dafka the mincha, the meal offering? How is that different maybe than the others? Another question which the Medrash itself asks, and that is, when are these early years? When are these days of old and early years that when we look back, everything was almost like idyllic then, and in the future it will be like then? When are those times? Well, we perhaps might think that this may perhaps the early days of the Beis HaMikdash or the days of the Mishkan. But the Medrash actually takes us all the way back. According to the Medrash, Shanim Kadmonios, the early years, refer to the days of Hevel, as in Cain and Hevel. I mean, that's very early. And what's the point? Because Hevel also brought a mincha, what's called a mincha. And Cain brought a korban, but we focus on the positive, we focused on Hevel. And what was so desirable about that, or what was so acceptable or pleasing about that korban? Says the Medrash, there was no Avodah Zarah yet in the world. Because it's just Hevel. I mean, Avodah Zarah had not been invented yet. So that made the korbanos especially, his korban especially pleasing. The question is, if we may ask and persist, whether there is Avodah Zarah in the world or not, obviously, ideally, there should not be Avodah Zarah in the world, and it's not good if there is. But presumably, the worth of a korban shouldn't be compromised. One could perhaps even counter-argue that if there's Avodah Zarah in the world, then a person gets it right and brings a korban, that should be even more pleasing, because he's made the right decision in the face of all the other options. But somehow, the full arevus, the full pleasantness of the korban was only ever really experienced in the days of Hevel before there was Avodah Zarah, and will only fully be re-experienced in the future when Avodah Zarah is discontinued. But why is that so? The Meshech Chochma, as is his way, opens the whole discussion here. When it comes to korbanos that one may volunteer, or perhaps even obligatory, so the individual can bring a korban, but one can also collaborate with someone else and bring a korban. Okay. Two people can share an ola or a shlamim or whatever it may be. Interestingly, when it comes to a korban mincha, there can be no partnership in a korban mincha. It can only be brought by one individual. What is the source? Says the Gemara in Maseches Menachos and Daf Nun Vav. Because, as we quoted actually last week, the pasuk that introduces the korban mincha says v'nefesh ki takriv, one soul per mincha, v'nefesh ki takriv korban mincha l'Hashem. And therefore, you can't have nefashos bringing a korban mincha, only nefesh. Aha. Okay. However, says Meshech Chochma, we should note that there are some types of mincha that the entire Jewish people bring. We're familiar with them. The Korban HaOmer that we referred to just a few moments ago, it's a mincha. It comes from barley. It's a mincha. On Shavuos, the Shtei Alechem, it's a mincha. But the entire Jewish people bring it. So if here we are saying that you can never have a mincha that is brought by more than one nefesh or more than one person, how is it the entire Jewish people can collaborate and together bring a mincha? The answer, says Meshech Chochma, is based on a medrash relating to Psukim in Parshas Bereishis. We need to define nefesh, because by the time we're finished, the Jewish people are a composite nefesh. The concept called Knesset Yisrael or Am Yisrael is a composite nefesh, and a nefesh brings a mincha. Now, where does this come from? Says the Medrash, why do we say the Jewish people are one nefesh? Where do you see that? Because look at the way the Pasuk describes Esav's family and Lahavdil, Yaakov's family. Says Medrash, Esav didn't have that many children, but all the members of his family are called, in Parshas Vayishlach, Nafshos Beiso, in the plural. In contrast, as we know, and we'll quote this pasuk, or one of the pasukim relating to this, on Seder night, Yaakov came down with 70 members of his family, and they're called Shivim Nefesh. So Esav is just a few, but they're called Nefoshos in the plural. Yaakov is many, but they're called Nefesh in the singular. Why? So the Medrash says, because everyone in Esav's family was worshipping a different deity. They're all over the place. There's such plurality within them, irreconcilably so, that expresses itself in the way that they're referred to. There's no cohesion, there's no unity there. Each person has a different idol. Whereas Yaakov's family, there's a lot of them, but they're all focused around Hashem Echad. And therefore, they're called Nefesh. They're one. They're unified. And therefore, coming back to our question, if only an individual or a single soul can bring a korban, mincha, nefesh ki takrib korban mincha, and yet the entire Jewish people can bring a korban mincha, how can that be? It must be the entire Jewish people are one nefesh, as the Midrash says. But why are they one nefesh? Because they're all focused on Hashem Echad. But there is a fascinating implication of this Midrash. Essentially, if you read the explanation of the Midrash, there is an implication. Namely, if the basis of the Jewish people being considered one nefesh is because they're all focused around Hashem Echad, then should you ever find a situation where the Jewish people lose their focus around Hashem Echad, they would lose their status as a composite nefesh. QED. If the basis, what allows them to enjoy the status of one nefesh, is focus around Hashem Echad, if they lose that focus, they lose that status. And in fact, this, says Meshech Chochma, is the situation that is described in the Sefer Shoftim, in the Navi. In the time of Gideon, and the Jewish people were suffering terribly from the Midianim, the Pasuk says in Shoftim Perek Vav, Vayidal Yisrael Ma'od, Yisrael became exceedingly impoverished under the Midianim. Okay, understandably so. But the Midrash comments. The Midrash says, you know what it means that they became exceedingly impoverished? They couldn't bring a korban mincha. That's what the Midrash says. Vayidal Yisrael Ma'od, they couldn't bring a korban mincha. Now we look at the Midrash and we say, wow, that they must have been really poor. I mean, if you can't bring a korban mincha, you have nothing. And we understand perhaps that the Midrash is describing their impoverished material or economic state. But the Meshech Chochma says, on a deeper level, this Midrash is talking about what led them to that state of decline and of difficulty and of oppression. Because at that time, the Jewish people were fragmented in terms of their religious allegiance. And as you see from Gideon himself, his father he had Asherah, and he had Baal, and other people had others. But what are the implications, aside from the gravity of Avodah Zarah? They're not one nefesh. One doesn't like to say, but they're closer to what Esav was like. They're nefoshos. Obviously not ultimately, but in practice. But if that's the case, so then this one is with Baal, and this one's with Asherah, and hopefully a few are with Hashem. And what's the result? Nefoshos. But nefoshos can't bring a mincha. Only a nefesh can bring a mincha. And that's why the Midrash says, Vayidal, you know how poor they were? Spiritually, they couldn't bring a mincha. They couldn't get themselves together because they weren't focused around Hashem Echad. It's an amazing insight into the Midrash, that comment. And moreover, it gives us also then further insight into what Gideon achieved or accomplished with his first act. His first act was not to go to war against Midian. That's the famous thing with the torches and the jugs and etc. His first act was to destroy the idols in his father's house. And it was the whole thing, and it caused a stir. And he broke the Mizbeach of Baal, and he uprooted the Asherah. And people, they didn't know what happened. Yerubal, he became known as Yerubal. But what's he doing? He's not merely, quote-unquote, looking to help the Jewish people recover from Avodah Zarah. He's looking to bring them together again. They have to relinquish any allegiance to any spurious deity to come back to focus around Hashem Echad, because then they'll be Echad, and then they'll be successful. That was his first act. And what's fascinating is, this then found expression at a certain point in the story there. In the Navi, if you take a look in Perek Zion, Hashem actually tells Gideon on the eve of battle, he tells him to go down to the Midianite camp, approach them, and Hashem says, you'll hear something. And And when you hear this, you'll know that you will be assured of success. What did he hear? So this is in Perek Zion. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayavo Gidon. So Gidon came. Vihine ish misaper l're'eu chalom. And he overheard, he was close enough to hear one of the Midianites, telling a dream that he had to his fellow. What's in the dream? Vayomer, and he said, Hine chalom chalamti, had a dream. Vihine tzilil lechem se'orim, there was this bread, this roasted barley bread, mishapech b'machane Midian, it was rolling through the camp of Midian, meaning causing all sorts of havoc. Vayavoad oel, and he came to our tent, vayakehu, and broke it, vayipol vayavcheu lebala, and the whole thing fell down, and was turned upside down. Absolute chaos. Was wrought by this barley bread rolling into the camp of Midian. Well, when his friend heard that, it was a bit of a pikeach, vayan re'eu vayomer, his friend, you know what that is? Ein zos bilti im cherev Gidon ben Yoash Yisrael. They'd heard about Gidon. That's the sword of Gidon. Meaning we're in trouble. If you had that dream, we're in trouble. Basically, you dreamt that the Midianite camp will be ransacked, will be devastated. Who's going to do it? That's Gidon. Nasana Elokim b'yadoes Midian v'esmachan. Hashem has delivered the camp of Midian into his hands. And when Gidon heard that, much encouraged, much emboldened, came back, and the rest is history. The question is, what is this barley bread that's causing such mayhem in the Midianite camp? Well, the Medrash comments, and the Medrash says, this was a reference to the Korban Omer. I don't know if the Midian knew it was the Korban Omer. He just knew there was trouble coming. But the actual significance of this barley bread is the Korban Omer, which was made from barley. And why did he have this dream then? Because this was actually the second night of Pesach. It's one of those things that we refer to, Vayibachatzia Laila or Vamatuzer Pesach, one of the two, in the Piyutim at the end, because the date that this occurred was actually the date of the of Katsira Sa'omer. But says Meshachachma, will appreciate that there's much more to it than just quote unquote the matter of timing. It was the time of the Omer worked against them and worked for us. On a deeper level, what it means is the Jewish people had returned to a state that they could bring the Korban Omer. The Korban Omer is a mincha. A mincha could be brought by one nefesh. The Jewish people prior to that were not one nefesh. This one was with Baal, this one was with Asherah. That's nefoshos. But Gidon had helped them to rid themselves of that. When they came back to be connected with Hashem Echad, so they came back to be connected with each other. And they became one nefesh. One nefesh could bring a korban omer just in time. That's the significance of the tzlil lechem se'orim. So we see the Jewish people have sometimes been in this state, sometimes have been lacking that state. But that's what it's all about. And this brings us, says Meshechachma, to the word ve'arva. Ve'arva l'Hashem. And the word arev means pleasant. But the truth is, says Meshechachma, the word Ariv means more than pleasant. Because sometimes there's something which itself is pleasant. But sometimes you have something which is, it is the composite result of many ingredients. And they come together, and they're blended together into some type of harmonized entity or unified entity, and they even bring out the best in each other. The word arev comes from the word eruv, that is to say, merging, or taruvis, or mixing. Things are come together, and they merge so perfectly that there is the composite result is certainly more than the sum of the parts. And that result is called arev. Well, now we can understand, says Meshechachma, why the concept of the arva l'Hashem pertains particularly to the mincha. Because what's especially pleasing about the mincha is that it's brought by the Jewish people. But how can that be? Are they not more than one nefesh? No. Altogether, they're one nefesh. They're one super nefesh. But how can that be? They're many individuals, but they're blended together. And because they themselves are in a state of eruv, in a state of taruvis, of perfect blend, which allows him to bring a mincha, the result of that mincha, or the effect of that mincha, is called the arva. That's the special arev pleasantness that comes as a result of eruv unification. But that didn't always happen, because sometimes people are distracted, and the essential, and really the central idea of Meshech Chochma, which I don't believe we normally emphasize, when we talk about the Jewish people being connected with each other, it's sometimes possible to have that entire discussion completely distinct of whether they're connected to Hashem. There's almost like two things. There's Ben Adam Lamakom, which is each person's own individual thing, and then aside from that, there's just a different metric, there's a different parameter, it's a different axis on the graph, which is called Bin Adam Lachaveiro, and that's how the Jewish people are together. But Meshech Chochma says, at the end of the day, if they are lacking the identity in terms of, and unity in terms of focus, and the focal point of their existence, their own unity will be flawed, because at the end of the day, what holds them together? And therefore the full unity of the Jewish people is ultimately a function of their unified focus towards Hashem as well. That state, says the Navi, it will come back. It will come back when all these distractions, which perhaps lead people to have their allegiance elsewhere, are discontinued. That's in the future. But you know what it will be like? It will be like it was in the beginning. How far back? All the way far back. Because in the days of Hevel there was no Avodah Zarah. That means there was nothing that was vying for Hevel, even as an individual, his attention. There were no alternatives to distract people. There were no ersatz deities to somehow usurp their allegiance. And therefore it was full v'arva. And that's why the future is associated with that time. So all of this is the, as is his way, the very profound discussion of the Meshech Chochma. And I believe perhaps that we may add just one point. Because this is the Haftorah that's read on the Shabbos before Pesach. And it's important for the future. But how does it relate to Pesach? But let's remind ourselves that the very first instruction that was given to the Jewish people was Mishchu ukuchu lachem, draw and take for yourselves the Korban Pesach. As we know, Chazal state, after all, Mishchu and kuchu are two separate verbs, but rather, says the Medrash, Mishchu, draw, means withdraw. That is to say, withdraw your hands from involvement in Avodah Zarah. That's what the Medrash says. Mishchu yadeichem min Avodah Zarah, and then you can take the Pesach. The first step in terms of connecting to Hashem with the Pesach is Sur Meira Va'ase Tov. All Avodah Zarah needs to be ground to a halt. If not now, when? And then you proceed towards the Korban Pesach. But it is also true that this is the evening of the Jewish people's nationhood. This is that they emerge as a people. And along comes the Haftorah and says, these two things are connected. There's a synergy between these two things. That is to say, their withdrawal from Avodah Zarah and absolute unified allegiance towards Hashem is itself the greatest thing that will ultimately bring them together. The more connected they are to Hashem, the more connected they'll be to each other. And therefore, in the interest of one people emerging from Mitzrayim, what is of the utmost importance, Mishku ukuchu lachem. And therefore, these two things, these two planes of between man and God and between man and man, they come together, which is really the central idea of Meshech Chochma. It's fascinating to conclude in this respect a comment of the Drisha. The Drisha is one of the commentaries on the Tur. And he also raises the question as to why Shabbos? I mean, why do we always follow the Shabbos? We don't follow the calendar date, the 10th of Nisan, but we follow Shabbos. Says the Drisha, once we appreciate that the full meaning of that mitzvah, Mishchu means withdraw from Avodah Zarah, withdrawing from Avodah Zarah was no easy matter for the Jewish people, as we often mention. It's impossible for us to really relate to what was so appealing to them about Avodah Zarah. But it was, and it was a big thing for them to not only withdraw from Avodah Zarah, but to publicly now repudiate Avodah Zarah in this way and to take a lamb with the intention of slaughtering it in front of the Egyptians. You need koach to do that. You need resolve to do that. Where does that come from? Well, ultimately, it's going to come from within the Jewish people, but they were helped. They were helped by the day of Shabbos. Because if there's any day of the week, says the Drisha, that will allow a person to see as clearly as possible the falseness of anything other than Hashem Echad, it's going to be the day when Hashem finished the Bria. And that's why there's always this connection between Shabbos and Ashrei Enoshia, says those. Shabbos can be Mechaper, says the Gemara, to a certain degree, even for Avodah Zarah, because the message of Shabbos and the vision of Shabbos is the beginning of the recovery from Avodah Zarah. And therefore, says the Drisha, it's a fascinating comment, they had to turn their backs on Avodah Zarah. It was no easy task, and they couldn't have done it without Shabbos. And that's why we follow the Shabbos. In this instance, we follow the day of the week when we recall the miracle. The miracle was not only, and the greatness of that event was not only that the Egyptians were unable to respond to what the Jewish people did, but that the Jewish people were able to do it in the first place. And that was thanks in part, in significant part, to Shabbos. And the result is every year, that's the Shabbos. Shabbos HaGodol. Well, having spoken about the Shabbos HaGodol, the Shabbos before Pesach, we come to address just a couple of comments, Mr. Hashem will continue next week, with regards to the Haggadah itself. And we cannot fail, and I cannot help beginning at the beginning of Maggid with Halach Ma'anya, and raise what will no doubt be some familiar questions, and perhaps offer some new insights. Halach Ma'anya has two, shall we say, striking aspects to it. Firstly, one cannot fail but notice that it's not in Hebrew. It's in Aramaic, and the question is, what is that for? As much as the classic answer, shall we say, is that this was the language that people used to speak, and it's important that people should understand the Haggadah. It is important people should understand the Haggadah. In fact, one of the great Rishonim who lived in London, Rabbeinu Yehuda of London, is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Pesach, and what is he quoted as doing? As saying he would say over the Haggadah to his family in English, because that was the spoken language there, and it is important. But nowadays people don't speak Aramaic that way anymore. In other words, the only way that we know what the Aramaic means is because we look in the English translation. So if we follow the principle, so this should be said in English. And there are very important parts of the Seder, and we don't say them. We say them in Hebrew. If you can translate them, if you want. Secondly, after Halach Ma'anya, the second and third sentences, they're doubled over, very noticeably. We say, Kol dichven yeseh v'yechal, whoever's hungry, let them come and eat. Kol ditrich yeseh v'yivsach, whoever needs, let them come and do Pesach. I mean, are those the same thing? Is it two ways of saying the same thing? Is it two different things? And similarly, you have this duality which follows the end. Hashata hocha l'shana ba b'ar Yisrael, hashata adel l'shana ba b'nei chorin. So, at a certain point in Halach Ma'anya, we begin to say the same thing twice, seemingly. And these questions are discussed by what is known as the Malbim Haggadah. The Malbim Haggadah, there's a good chance that it was not actually written by the Malbim, but certainly someone in his style, very effectively. Rabbi Naftali Maskel Le'eson was his name. And he suggests, as many others do, in fact, that the beginnings of this paragraph were it's a product of the Golos in Bavel, and that's why it's in Aramaic. In other words, it's a Bavel original. It's not part of the original of the actual Haggadah, but it was something that was added on in the time of Bavel, and it's something that they would say. And even when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, they continued to say it. And they continued to say it in Aramaic, because actually the spoken language, the lingua franca, so to speak, of Eretz Yisrael, even in the second Beis HaMikdash, by the general populace, was Aramaic still, not Hebrew. And therefore, they began in Bavel, but it carried on in Eretz Yisrael. However, says the Malbim Haggadah, there is a different Nusach for when you're in Bavel than for when you're in Eretz Yisrael, for very straightforward reasons. Firstly, in Bavel there is no Korban Pesach. In Eretz Yisrael there is. Secondly, in Bavel you're not in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael you are. And therefore, the first half of each sentence, it's a fascinating dissection, shall we say, or understanding of the makeup of this paragraph. But the first section represents how it was originally said in Babel. And that's where the first section says, Kol dich ben yesev yechal, anyone who's hungry, let them come and eat. There's no reference to Pesach. They didn't have a Pesach at that time. Later on, when they came back, that became substituted with Kol ditzruch yesev yifsach. Whoever needs, let them come and do Korban Pesach. That was the Eretz Yisrael dika nusach of that sentence. And what about the final sentence? It begins the way they said it in Babel. Hoshata hacha lashon haba ba'aretz Yisrael. This year here, next year in Israel. But when they were in Israel, they didn't say that anymore. But there was something else they needed to say. Because isn't it true that it's possible to be an Eretz Yisrael but not to be free? That means that we came back under the auspices of other nations. Persia, we were never really fully free of their authority. If that sounds familiar. And therefore, even when one is in Eretz Yisrael, there's still room to say Ashata Avde. We're not fully independent. We're not fully free to act the way that we would like to, in the best sense of the word. Lashana Babinecharin. All of that takes place within Eretz Yisrael. So this is the wonderful explanation of the Malbim Haggadah to Halach Ma'anya. And from there, let's move to Manishtana. And what's interesting about the Manishtana is actually a very basic question, which is raised by Rav Kook in his Perush Olas Re'iya to the Haggadah, and that is the order. So if we imagine the child, he kind of notices things are unusual, but how does he begin? He begins by saying, on all other nights, come, it's a matzah, tonight is matzah. We're not at matzah yet. He says, for example, the fourth question is, on all other nights, you can eat sitting or reclining. Tonight we're reclining. He's seen that first. The first of the cups is already drunk reclining. So it's a very interesting order of things. Why does it not follow the chronological Seder? That's an interesting shaila. And Rav Kook explains. And he propounds an idea, and in fact the roots of this idea can be traced back earlier. What is the Manishtana? Interesting, you know, are these spontaneous questions? I mean, unless the child has Ruach HaKodesh, how is he going to know exactly that these are the four questions? Are these a sample of the four questions? Is he meant to prepare these four questions? How does it go? I mean, we prepare them. I mean, it's a set nusach. But if the child is registering surprise, so how can there be a set script for his surprise? What does that mean? The point is, says Rav Kook, that any child who sees something unusual will ask about it, doesn't need to be prompted. But isn't there a child who does need to be prompted? Isn't there a child who he sees whatever he sees and nothing seems to be having an effect on him? He's the Einyo de Elishol. So Rav Kook says, the Manishtana is for the Einyo de Elishol. A person who knows to ask by himself, he'll ask. What will he ask about? Whatever he sees. In what order? Whatever order he sees it. But what if a person doesn't know to ask? So you need to prod him. You need to suggest questions to him. And what's the point? The point is that the goal, even for the Ein Yodei Lishol, is not merely to tell him what's happening. Everyone needs to ask. If people naturally ask, good. If not, make them ask. That's the point. And this idea is actually to be found in Rashi's Perush to the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Because as we know, the approach towards the Ein Yodei Lishol is at Pesachlo. Ein Yodei Lishol at Pesachlo. And what does that mean? You open. You open with what? So we perhaps understand that, you know, if only he would ask, fine. But Lamaisa, you'll be here all night and nothing's going to happen, so you may as well just tell him. And at Pesachlo. But Rashi says no. At Pesachlo means open him up. Give him an opening, as if to say, if he's not asking, open with a question. So that he should ask. Everyone's got to ask. Interesting. And in fact, this even seems to be the understanding, perhaps even a simple explanation of the Mishnah. How so? Much of the structure of the Seder was already back from the Mishnah in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. And the the Mishnah says, Mosgim Kosheni, right? We pour the second cup, which is already a little bit unusual. Vikan HaBen Shoel. And here the child will ask. What will he ask? Why are you pouring the second cup? Vim Ein Bodas Lishol. And if he doesn't know to ask, right, the Mishnah is talking about a person who doesn't know, Aviv Malamdo, his father teaches him. What comes next? Manish Tana. In other words, the simple reading of the Mishnah is that the Manish Tana is what you teach the child who doesn't know to ask. But Manish Tana is itself questions. Yes, you teach him those questions, as if to say, you present him with those questions. He's not forthcoming of himself, bring the questions to him. Don't bring the answers before the questions. He doesn't know, teach him. What do you teach him? Teach him Manish Tana. I wonder perhaps whether one can trace this back even earlier to the Pasuk itself. Because the Einu De Lishol, his Pasuk is Vigadata Levincha Bayomahu Lemor. That's the well-known Pasuk for Seder night. Pavrazel Stashem Li, right? That's for the Einu De Lishol. Vigadata and Lemor are two conflicting verbs. Because if we know from Rashi, Kotomer Lebeis Yaakov, Vitagid Levnei Yisrael. Amira is pleasant, Amira Raka. Haggadah is kashim kegidim, things that are difficult. So the pasuk is saying, "Vigadata levincha, v'yomu lemor." So should you make it difficult for him or easy for him? Should it be kashim kegidim or should it be amira raka? The answer is, you've got to start with vihigadata. You've got to start by making things difficult for him. You've got to start by pointing out things that might be, need resolutions for him, and that will lead to lemor. Those will then be resolved by the answer. But if they're not preceded by the question, the answer will not be much of a resolution. The goal, therefore, for the Einu De Lishol is Haggadah should lead to Amira. The Higadata, Koshim Kigidim, make life, stir him up a little bit, make life difficult for him a bit. And then towards Amira. And Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele, after that introduction, says Rav Kook, so now look at the Manish Tana. You know what's interesting about the Manish Tana? It doesn't follow the chronological sequence, but it follows the sequence of departure from the norm. In stages, as if to say, we're looking to open up the Einu De Lishol, so you begin with something which seems a little bit unusual, as if to say, there's matzah here, but no chometz, right? Something's missing. What about that? Matzah and chometz, they're not that, you know, on all other nights we have both, so it's not a glaring absence, but isn't it unusual? No, that's the first thing. And what comes next? That on all other nights, Shai Rokos, why are we eating maror? That's more unusual in terms of choice of food. So thus far in terms of the menu, can he identify certain things that are different? If yes, good. The ideal almost is to stop as soon as he takes over, so to say. You just feed him, pardon the expression, enough that he should then be in a state of wonder. But if that didn't work, so you go for something more. What are we dipping? Are we dipping here, dipping there? Right, those are actions, and those are unusual actions. And if he still doesn't get it, you ask him, how come everyone's sideways? Right? We're normally Ben Yoshua Mesubim and Halayla Zeh Kolano Mesubim, which is the most visibly different thing about the evening than it normally is. And this, therefore, they are in levels of increasing departure from the norm. That's the didactic, or that's the pedagogic way to introduce the Manish Tana once you understand what it's there for and whom it's there for. Leave it over there this evening. Karen Mitzvah Hashem next week.